I have with us on the other end of the phone, Professor Anthony J. Hall, professor at Lethbridge University. He's also the founder of the Center for Globalization Studies at Lethbridge University. Welcome to the phone. Are you there, Mr. Hall?
Hey, Raymond.
Hi. Welcome to the show.
Pleased to be here.
Thank you, and welcome to the 9/11 Truth Movement.
Yes.
Yes, indeed. Am I correct in assuming that you teach, globalization studies at the Lethbridge University? Is that primarily what you teach?
Yeah, I started globalization studies at the University of Lethbridge in 2003.
Okay, very nice. And there's a website, I'm not positive if it is yours, globalizationstudies.ca, is
that? That's my website, yeah.
Okay, very nice. So, now, of course, I guess you made your 9/11 debut in Edmonton this last September, and you released a paper with a lot of Canadian content. I'll read the title. It's The Lies and Crimes of 9/11, A Canadian View on the War on Terror's Origins.
Yeah, it seems to now be on 30 or 40 sites. I was surprised. Actually, last spring, I went to visit my friend Splitting the Sky, and he had become very preoccupied with 9/11 and had been researching it for a couple of years, and brought him over to Lethbridge, and we did a class together. And in preparation for the class, I Googled sites. I'd been looking at the War on Terror, and I'd been suspicious about the events of 9/11, but I really hadn't come to terms with it, and I got inducted in a certain sense, or I realized from talking with Splitting the Sky and dealing with the issues that the time had come, that you couldn't sit on the fence forever, that some reckoning with this vital central event in our times had to be made. And that the universities, I think, have a especially important role, obviously. And so very quickly, Kevin Barrett invited me onto his show. I think it was called Truth Jihad at the time. And so that was back in the spring. So over the summer, on the basis of that appearance on Kevin's show, I was invited to do the Edmonton conference. So it became a kind of project over the summer, and I realized that I would have to adjust certain parts of the big book I'm working on, Earth into Property. So I did that over the summer and prepared for the September 6th event in Edmonton. And it did seem appropriate to give Canadian perspectives and to deal with it from a Canadian angle. Things have moved quickly since September the 6th and that paper, The Lies and Crimes of 9/11.
Yeah, indeed. Tell me, from what I understand, you are attempting to encourage other academics to speak out on this 9/11 issue. Is that correct?
Oh, absolutely. Universities, I mean, what is the purpose of universities? What is the mission of universities in Canada, in North America, in the world? If there's any mission, surely it is to distinguish what is true from what isn't true, what is true from what might be possible, what is true from what is unlikely. So living through this era where this central event of our time, the events of 9/11, is used to justify invasions, used to justify all manner of incursions on civil liberties, used to justify torture, used to justify all manner of incursions into our private life, I think it's really unconscionable that universities should not take this issue more seriously. There are, you know, I discovered a number of professors working on it, but very few professors who are teaching right now and are, in the saddle, as it were. So, I think it's really vital that professors deal with this, that we deal with it as part of our curriculum, that we deal with it as part of our research responsibilities, because it is, after all, the sets the background for the major things happening in the world today.
Yeah. You mentioned, Kevin Barrett, and he got into a lot of hot water over his views. And, you know, he was teaching just a Muslim studies class or Islam studies. And, you know, the focus wasn't 9/11. I believe that was going to be covered only one day of the semester. How about yourself? Has there been any backlash from your university, your workplace?
Well, I had a professor at École des Hautes Études Commerciales in Montreal come at me pretty hard. I had a letter in the National Post, which was connected to a variety of things that appeared in the National Post in October after the Leslie Hughes affair developed. It seemed to me really vital to deal with the subject, deal with what I think is the careless and irresponsible way that this word anti-Semitism was being thrown around, you know, a very serious and powerful word that needs to be used thoughtfully and carefully, and I don't think was being used in that way. In any case, a person by the name of Gabriel Brenner identified herself as a taxpayer, accused me of anti-Semitism, accused me of probably being a fraud and not fit to teach.
Mm-hmm.
So I searched her on Google and discovered that she herself is a professor.
Mm.
And it seemed to me inappropriate that if you're going to indict another colleague in the academy, you shouldn't hide the fact that you're a professor. She was hiding the fact that she's a professor. National Post, when I responded to her, chose not to include the fact that I indicated she was a professor.
Mm.
So we got into an exchange of correspondence that was copied to a number of people, and she ended up writing to the vice president academic of my university,
okay,
making allegations. But that individual, Andy Haken, Dr. Haken, replied that they would be taking no action. So I have had a run. I have had a couple of students withdraw from my course when I began to teach these things.
Okay.
But I'm proud to say that I think there's an understanding at my university that this is legitimate. And, you know, I would say that it really is irresponsible for professors in, say, political science departments, professors teaching, say, American history or American politics or global politics or international relations. I think it's really negligent and irresponsible for professors teaching such subjects not to deal with, you know, that what is now a very large body of literature, a very large body of research on 9/11 studies. I'm not saying that there's a particular position that I would like to see professors take. Obviously, each individual will deal with it in his or her own way and come to his or her own conclusions. But I do think it is unconscionable and cowardly and unprofessional and unethical to avoid the subject and just pretend that it's not there, or simply just adhere to the official version, the official conspiracy theory, the 19 Saudis with box cutters, without dealing with the reality that this is really contested, and there's a large body of literature that contests the official interpretation, you know, with in a way that I find quite compelling and credible, some of it.
Mm-hmm.
David Ray Griffin's work, Peter Dale Scott's work, Chalcedowski's work, John McMurtry's work, on and on I can go.
Yeah, indeed. Okay, so there's been a little bit of backlash. Have many people come up and said, congratulations, good for you? Are you receiving any of that?
In the academy, I can't really say that that's the case. When I spoke in Edmonton, it was interesting, very interesting to see A full auditorium in the main library in Edmonton, maybe 300 people who, much to my surprise, had paid $15 admission. I'd never spoken in a venue like that where people actually pay money to hear it. And there was a period left for a sort of press conference. Not one press showed up. We were in Edmonton, which is there's an important university there, University of Alberta, based in Edmonton. I didn't see one professor there, not to say that I would recognize anybody, but nobody came up to me and identified themselves, and I do know a number of people there. So I would say that's what is wrong with the University of Alberta, the professoriate in the University of Alberta, that there's no interest in that. It was taking place right across the street from the CBC, and I find it increasingly disreputable on the CBC's part that they participate in this cover-up that, our own Crown Corporation simply stonewalls, joins in this stonewalling with, the CNNs, the CBSs, the New York Times. Mm-hmm. But, we don't expect that of our own Crown Corporation in Canada.
Yeah. Yeah, very frustrating. I've written many heartfelt comments to them over the years, asking them to reevaluate their position on this. If you go to their so-called in-depth page on September 11th, it really is a joke.
I really think, I encourage my students, the commercial media right now is so discredited. Don't buy a newspaper. Don't get your news from television. Use the internet, use your discretion, and the commercial media venues, they're hurting. The people are turning away from them, and they should turn away from them because they are disgracefully violating their mission, which should be to inform the public. Rather than that, they keep from the public information which is necessary to the health of our democracy, and they should be held accountable, and they will be held accountable in the long run. I mean, this stonewalling and cover-up of the lies and crimes of 9/11 is resulting in invasions, build-up of militarism on a scale we haven't seen. Increasingly, it looks to me like inventing an enemy to justify the growth of the military-industrial complex. And, the commercial media is a central part of the military-industrial complex. Mm-hmm. The brainwashing and thought control is just grown to unbelievably grotesque proportions.
Yeah, indeed.
And it's hard to find words strong enough, but I'm trying.
Yeah, absolutely. You're right. Media is supposed to be, the fourth estate, absolutely integral to a working democracy. And, we see the problems, don't we, when it doesn't do its job.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
So getting back to speaking about Canadian professors like yourself, I want to touch on a recent roundtable discussion that happened this last November 19th.
Just a few days ago.
Yeah, that's recent news. Can you tell us a little bit about this event?
Yeah, okay. It resulted from my correspondence with Professor Kiefer. When the National Post was covering these issues, when some of us were trying to deal with the outgrowth of the decision by the Liberal Party not to allow Leslie Hughes to run because she had said some things about 9/11, I quickly got involved in correspondence with Barry Zwicker, with Michael Kiefer, with Graham McQueen, from time to time with John McMurtry. And so I proposed to Professor Kiefer at Guelph that I do a video conference. If you go to globalizationstudies.ca, you'll see, if you look in the archives, you'll see many of my classes are on the Internet. Many of them are video conferences. When I started Globalization Studies, the idea came to me that I should try to host, use the new media and try to host a discussion about globalization and draw as widely as I could on voices from here and there, at least throughout Canada, if not throughout the larger world. And I have done a few video conferences from Poland.
Hmm.
I was in Poland speaking to my students in Lethbridge, and it was webcast. So in any case, on the 19th, due to Professor Kiefer's, Michael Kiefer's, very generous willingness to essentially host the event at Guelph and contact my technical people with the people at Guelph who can do video conferences. That was the beginning of it. And I invited Professor McQueen, mm-hmm. Graham McQueen of McMaster, founder of the Peace Institute at McMaster.
Right.
Bertrand Russell had a big role in starting that and I was really pleased that John McMurtry also agreed to the request to join us. So the four of us got together and discussed 9/11. We called it 9/11 and the global community.
Okay.
John McMurtry, he had been very quick off the mark in 2002. I guess as soon as 9/11 happened, he had the insight that it was not as it was presented to us.
Okay.
And so, I became aware of his work and his good reputation, his erudition was part of the process of persuading me that I should take the issue seriously too.
Mm-hmm.
So it was really a wonderful experience to sit with colleagues at the same table for 3 hours to talk with students in Lethbridge, Adnan Zubairi from the University of Waterloo 9/11 study group was there. He videoed it, and he's just now editing his version of it. But I was quite surprised. Wayne Pronti, I'm not quite too sure if he just captured it in the webcast or if he pulled it off our publication of it on globalizationstudies.ca, but it appeared on Canada 9/11 Truth. It came up on 911blogger.com. It's not very good quality. The sound isn't very good quality.
The sound is a little bit difficult, yes.
Yeah, but a better version of it is to come.
I think very good.
And Adnan is working on it in the Guelph Waterloo area.
Okay, that's good to hear.
Yeah, so it's fascinating to see how much desire there is for information on this subject and good discussion on this subject. And it's quite surprising to me, this network, the vitality of this network. I think this network is growing to be one of the most interesting activist networks in the world, really. I mean, it's all over the world, especially in Europe and Japan. I think it's really on the cutting edge of citizens journalism on the internet.
Yeah.
And it's the 9/11 truth movement is its implications go very far. It speaks of the development of a new kind of politics, and I think the commercial media, by ignoring it, they do so at their peril.
Yes.
I think it's really important that those seeking after those engaged in the quest for 9/11 truth. And, I don't have 9/11 truth. I don't know exactly what happened on 9/11,
mm-hmm.
but I certainly can see it's not hard to see that the official conspiracy theory is implausible. It doesn't, not one aspect of it stands up to any degree of scrutiny.
Yeah, that's right.
But, you know, getting that idea developed and coming to terms with the implications of that idea, I think it's really important that countries like Canada and Japan and Germany and Spain, that in a way the United States, the psychological climate there is so distorted. Things are so abysmal in the United States that it almost is incumbent upon people outside the United States to try to get some kind of handle on this and how to, you know, bring to justice criminals who are responsible for 9/11. It almost has to be an international process.
Okay.
So I see, you know, what's going on in Canada and our could I say demand, our insistence that there has to be some investigation here in Canada, that this has international implications.
Okay, so are you suggesting, for example, one of the goals of the 9/11 truth movement in Canada seems to be to encourage our politicians to create such an investigation which would hopefully remove us from Afghanistan and lessen our ties to the American Empire to the South?
Yeah, well, let's start at the beginning here. 24, sometimes I see 24, sometimes I see 25 Canadians are murdered in the Twin Towers. Do we investigate that? I mean, do we say, oh, the Air India flight with all the Canadians, well, it didn't fall in Canada, therefore we're just going to leave it to somebody else to look into? I think it's a disgrace that our own criminal investigators don't look into the death of our own Canadians in the Twin Towers, just accept somebody else's account of what happened, an account that doesn't emerge from any criminal investigation, an account that emerges almost immediately, and, you know, putting the responsibility on plotters in caves in Afghanistan. So what about that investigation? Look at what we did on the Air India tragedy. Are these 24 Canadian lives less worthy of a proper investigation by our own authorities? Then we look at the fact that we're in Afghanistan in connection with NATO. Should we be continuing to be involved in NATO? Isn't NATO about the North Atlantic Treaty area? I don't see that Afghanistan is particularly in the North Atlantic area. I think NATO began as a kind of cover for U.S. Military objectives, and it continues that. So we've lost four times as many Canadians in Afghanistan based on this very implausible interpretation of what happened in 9/11. And when we get into the history of Afghanistan, of course, you know, this is where the Mujahideen was put together by the CIA in cooperation with the Pakistani ISI. Osama bin Laden emerges as a CIA agent involved in the growth of the Mujahideen. The Mujahideen includes the Taliban, the Northern Alliance. You know, we're currently seeing a civil war in Afghanistan, and we're on the side of the foreign occupiers of Afghanistan, taking a position in a civil war. And there is that history that the people blamed for the events of 9/11 are in fact a force that the United States, the CIA, and the ISI have a great deal to, you know, essentially put it together and direct the Mujahideen in Afghanistan at overthrowing the Soviet puppet regime, which happens in the 1980s. So where is a real consideration of that history in our role in Afghanistan? And if I take it one step further, the third dimension of this is that Canada is part of NORAD, the agency that is supposed to protect the North American airspace. And, of course, NORAD and the failure of NORAD to intercept these planes, the fact that NORAD was busy doing drills, much of it drawn off to Alaska, you know, that is part of the very suspicious circumstances around the official conspiracy theory that we've been given of 9/11. So we, you know, we're part of NORAD, the government of Canada, the sovereign country of Canada is part of NORAD. So on these three scores, Canadians have been cheated. Canadians have not been given the investigation we need to understand our own relationship to the events of 9/11. And we need to demand of our politicians who will be, you know, who are lobbying us now for their different agendas, you know, in this situation that has arisen where, you know, this coalition of Liberal and NDP and Bloc Québécois are going to create the government of Canada if things proceed as they look like they are at this moment. So as politicians are asking our support, just like we tried during the election, we need to continue the pressure to say, look, we need some accountability from our political institutions, from our politicians. Don't just give us another country's implausible interpretation of the roots of the war on terror. We're involved in the war on terror. We're doing things in the name of the war on terror. We need to have a proper investigation of the origins of the war on terror, that is the events of 9/11, and test the different interpretations of the events of 9/11. That's what a decent sovereign country would do. That's what a real sovereign country would do. A country that isn't sovereign would act like a satellite of the United States, would act just like the government of Paul Martin and Stephen Harper have acted. In other words, acted like satellites, colonial subordinates of the U.S. empire. We need to get some true expression of Canadian sovereignty in our government and demand that we come to terms with by investigating the events of 9/11 and what transpired out of that and from that right up to today.
Mm-hmm. Do you see a certain party that looks promising?
No, I see nothing but evasion so far. The fact that Jack Layton didn't throw Bev Collins in BC overboard during the election like Stéphane Dion threw Leslie Harper overboard, I suppose that could be seen as a tiny step. Jack Layton, you know, didn't back away from acknowledging his friendship with Barry's Vicar. Barry's Vicar, who, of course, has done pioneering work, important seminal work on identifying the lies and crimes of 9/11.
And to do it so quickly, that's one of his benchmarks, is that he was the first to do it on cable television to show an alternative theory.
The Barry's Vicar. Yeah, he's done fantastic work. He's a tremendous educator. But Jack Layton simply, after saying he's, you know, in the tape that Nathan Moulton did, it was just a little YouTube production that suddenly was, you know, on the Liberal Party website. The YouTube production where he simply asked Jack Layton in a book signing in a Calgary bookstore if he knew about 9/11 truth, and Layton said, yeah, I know about it, I'm a friend of his vicar,
he's read the books, he said,
you know, then when asked about it, he simply says, no, I don't believe it.
That was a couple very positive days for the Canadian Truth Movement after that video was released. And, of course, you know, the following week it came out and, attempted to erase what he had said the week before.
Yeah, but, I did a piece on Leslie Hughes' matter. And in fact, the National Post wrote an article about it. Paul Russell at the National Post wrote an article about it. It was quite interesting that the National Post was getting involved in the issue, and it was kind of exciting to be affecting their journalistic take on it for a few days there. But as I thought it through, and I went to the Conservative Party's press releases, which had begun the process. Essentially, Stéphane Dion was, in a sense, blackmailed, almost had a knife to his throat to throw Leslie Hughes overboard, in other words, to disqualify her from running as a Liberal candidate in Winnipeg.
Yeah.
But when I looked at the Conservative Party press releases on the subject, the extreme nature of their language, the extreme nature of their dismissal of the those seeking a better explanation of the events of 9/11 than we've been given by officialdom, their language was so incendiary and basically dismissed anybody asking questions about 9/11 as notorious for their anti-Semitism.
Yeah.
This is the basis of hate talk. I mean, there's a great deal of controversy about the role of the Human Rights Commission and what is hate talk. But hate talk, I mean, the Conservative Party press releases didn't say such and such an individual, such and such a thing, and what they have said is anti-Semitic, or such and such a group has published such and such a thing, and because it has this statement in it, it is anti-Semitic. There is, and Peter Kent was quoted saying, as part of this press release, just saying anybody involved in this quest for 9/11 truth is notorious for their it's a movement notorious for their anti-Semitism. And, let's be clear, there are sites, there are individuals who I think are anti-Semitic who do ask questions about 9/11, just like there's, racists and bigots in different political parties or different groups. I mean, the 9/11 truth movement is not a monolith. It's different people with different points of view who ask questions in different ways. But the way the Conservative Party press releases were worded, I mean, this is speech calculated to generate hatred towards a whole group. And the language is very intemperate. And to see, our own government condemn people in that way, to have that label put on one is, very serious. It's very serious to just dismiss a whole group of people as racist bigots. And that's what the government of Stephen Harper has done. And Stephen Harper, is not qualified to be Prime Minister of Canada. That kind of careless, destructive use of hate language, is beneath contempt, and it is so satisfying to see that kind of situation that the Conservative Party is facing, where they do not have confidence. They have not earned the confidence of the House of Commons. And the House of Commons, the three parties, are taking steps,
yeah,
which should be taken, given the nature of the present party. That
yeah,
is,
yeah. I'd like
control.
I'd like to follow where you're leading us. However, I did want to jump back into the Leslie Hughes issue, and the point of how she found out was on basically live CBC TV. They showed up maybe out front her residence or her workplace and confronted her to say that, do you know that you're no longer part of the Liberals? I mean, it, really nasty tactics there, almost as if to, well, I think you suggested, to scare people into compliant silence.
Well, in my article on the subject, I call it a clash of conspiracy theories, and the other article is hate speech as political rhetoric. But in my article, the clash of conspiracy theories, The information that Leslie Hughes disseminated in 2002 in a conference where in which Barry's vicar was involved, the information was incorrect. And so identified it as being incorrect. But was Leslie Hughes motivated by some desire to condemn Jews? That stretches it too much. She made a mistake. But, you know, to spin it the way it was spun and to take that kind of action, which, you know, takes her out of the mainstream and pushes her off to the margins and sends out a signal, you know, a freezing signal. Don't even talk about this.
We're
going to
assassinate your career. Yeah.
Yeah. And to see, as I say, I it was quite painful to see the situation between the Conservative Party, the Liberal Party, and the NDP. But really, if you go to the press releases, and I'm sure you could find the press releases on the Internet, and certainly you could find the relevant quotes in my article on the Internet, A Clash of Conspiracy Theories. The most outlandish hate talk was in the conservative camp, and I think that should be identified. And I think the fact that the media, you know, didn't touch it, didn't deal with it, didn't the commercial media didn't deal with it in any way, it again speaks of the complete negligence, the failure of our commercial journalists and the CBC to do their job in a responsible and decent manner. And they don't deserve credibility. They don't until they deal with these fundamental issues. You know, how did we get in the war on terror? How is it that the war on terror is defining all kinds of our relationships within the country, our country towards the outside world, and yet, you know, we won't address the idea that there has been no credible investigation, that the 9/11 Commission is, you know, widely understood to be a fraud. Actually, I'd like to talk about this issue. I don't know if you want to lead me in another direction, but I've been doing some interesting reading.
Well, please do carry on.
Yeah, well, I'm trying to learn, you know, I'm on a steep learning curve, I guess you could say, on these matters. So I wanted to be, you know, well informed on September the 6th, but, you know, some people have been working on this issue
for years,
in a concerted
yeah.
way for years and years.
Sure.
And I'm aware of the fact that I'm, you know, coming in and having lots to learn. The 9/11 Commission, I learned that Philip Zelikow is the main author, and I became quite fascinated with Philip Zelikow and looked up his old articles. So Philip Zelikow is basically a political appointee. He was part of the Bush transition team. He worked with, in fact, he wrote a book with Condoleezza Rice.
Yeah.
I mean, no way is he a neutral, in a position of a neutral judge. You know, he's basically covering up for his political patrons. And the whole 9/11 Commission report, you know, has that. It's appointed by Bush. So how are people going to look into the possible role of White House or factions within the White House, possible involvement in the crimes and lies of 9/11? Zelikow is a expert in something called public mythology.
Okay.
And as you study this subject of public mythology, it's very powerful in the United States. It has a very powerful role in the political economy of the United States. I've been reading about Edward Bernays, and Edward Bernays is known as the founder of public relations.
Right.
In the early 1950s, this expert in public relations created the whole mythology that involving the United Fruit Company and its role in relationship to the CIA and the State Department in the coup that overthrew the government of elected official Arbenz, Jacob Arbenz. Bernays was doing all the media spin doctoring and creating this vision that there was this kind of malevolent communist takeover of Guatemala, which wasn't true at all. Anyway, creating the public mythology that enabled this transformation of the geopolitics of Central America to take place in a way that, you know, it resulted in the 1980s in 200,000 individuals being killed by paramilitary and military squads, you know, backed by the U.S. government. So that part of the world has seen, you know, terrible crimes against humanity, Guatemala in particular. So the destabilizing of Guatemala in the 1950s would have, you know, long-term consequences. It was also the event where Che Guevara, you know, he was there in Guatemala City and witnessed this, and that had a lot to do with the attack that Fidel Castro and Che Guevara took in their subsequent exploits, you know, leading to the government and the revolution in Cuba, which exists to this day. You know, the role of using fear and creating facades and imagery to realize political objectives. You know, when you flash forward to the events of 9/11, it's this massive spectacle, you know, creating iconographic thinking that defines our times and defines the imagination of peoples. When you really look at the depth of research and use of so-called public relations or perceptions management, or as Zelikow called it, you know, public mythology to create imagery, to create false imagery that created political environments for powerful interests to sell products or to sell wars, sell aggressions. You know, it's very striking.
Well, it seems like this ties into the phrase "manifest destiny," which you use in your essay. You know, lies to support this. You know, that the Americans deserve it. You know, they're so good that why shouldn't they go and help others out?
Well, now, manifest destiny is a term. It has a religious connotation that God has made it manifest his will that the United States should take over territory, should expand, should dominate, should spread their way of life. This was a big idea around the time of the Spanish-American War. And the Spanish-American War was largely sold to the public by William Randolph Hearst and his media empire. Yeah. And it's interesting that, you know, Popular Mechanics that writes this, that has this article defending the official conspiracy theory of 9/11,
yeah,
you know, Popular Mechanics is to this day a Hearst publication.
Yeah.
And the CEO of that publication is involved with something called Business Executives for National Security. You know, it's interesting that you raise Manifest Destiny, which I connect to the Hearst media empire. And the Hearst media empire has, you know, a big role in trying to hold on to this whole, you know, keep alive this official conspiracy theory with that article in Popular Mechanics.
Yeah. I also believe that Chertoff, the director of Homeland Security, his cousin was put in as a senior editor for that publication prior to the release of that that article.
Yeah, I was just reading about an alleged sort of coup, or all the old timers were removed from Popular Mechanics just before this article was done.
Yeah.
The research for this article was done. It's a subject that I've been Googling tonight. A student did a very interesting presentation, an internet presentation this evening on this Edward Bernays and his relationship to the Guatemalan episode, you know, which came at a time when the CIA was really getting into covert operations, not just spying in foreign countries, but 1953 playing a major role in overthrowing Mossadegh, who wanted to nationalize oil in his country of Iran, putting in place the Shah of Iran, who governed in quite a brutal fashion in dealing with his opponents in Iran. So then in the next year was the intervention in Guatemala, when the government changed from Sukarno to Suharto in Indonesia in the mid-1960s, about a million people were cleansed. The PKI, the Communist Party, and any possible associates of that were simply murdered in the mid-1960s. The elected government of Allende in Chile was removed in a U.S.-backed coup. He was taken out of power and murdered in a U.S.-backed coup, and a fascist dictator by the name of Pinochet was put in its place. Lumumba in Congo was assassinated and removed when it looked like he was going to nationalize resources in the Congo, and in his place a brutal dictator, Sesi Seko or Mobutu, Joseph Mobutu, was put in place. I mean, what I tried to do in that paper is to the Lies and Crimes of 9/11 is talk about the history of covert interventions, the sort of secret government. I call it the national security state in the United States. I mean, we've seen a growth of the national security state since the National Security Act in 1947 under Harry Truman. That was the beginning of the CIA as we know it in its present form under Alan Dulles. The national security state, of course, it doesn't adhere to domestic laws, to international laws. It doesn't adhere to the Charter of the United Nations, to the Atlantic Charter, to the Genocide Convention. It seems that once you attach the phrase national security to something, it seems to be a license to violate laws, to commit murders, to commit huge acts that build up the strength and power of the military-industrial complex. Ever since 1941, the United States has been committed to this military economy. And I suppose at the end of the Cold War, it looked for a time like the United States might have to transform the basis of its military-industrial complex, the basis of the main organizing basis of its whole economy. But rather than that happening, this war on terror provides a license for kind of unlimited growth of the military-industrial complex and all the economic interests attached to it. It more and more looks like you need to have an enemy. If you don't have an enemy, help invent one. So how is it that here we are in the 21st century engaged in what is increasingly clear to me is essentially a religious war? How did that happen? How are our imaginations being so twisted that public are willing to tolerate this?
Okay. A lot of other contemporary researchers would suggest that the end goal or the end game is a new world order, you know, the continued consolidation of money and power. Do you see that? Does your thoughts go that way or
well,
not?
You know, this new world order, it's a, you know, Alex Jones uses the phrase, and to me it's I have difficulty with the phrase. It seems to me the New World Order really goes back to 1492, and the idea of the United States from its inception, you know, in the era of 1776, was that this is a new world country, and you're going to displace the old world indigenous population, and you're going to replace them with Europeans and others who you will remake, and they will become citizens of this new world country. So, new world order to me is a phrase that is synonymous with certain thinking in the United States, essentially from its very inception. And speaking of which, you know, if the Declaration of Independence, I find a very clear pointer to what we now call the War on Terror in the Declaration of Independence. I don't know if you're willing to go there.
Well, we've got about 5 minutes. If that's where you want to take it, we can do that. But we are nearing the top of the hour.
Okay. Well, why don't you signal to me where you might
take it? I've got 4 points here that maybe we can touch on one or two in the remaining time. First off, your book series, Volume 2, is going to be out shortly. Bowl with One Spoon is the series. The latest yet-to-be-released book is Earth into Property, Aboriginal History and the Making of Global History.
That's Global Capitalism. Yeah, let me just clarify.
Okay, please do.
Volume 1 is called The American Empire and the Fourth World.
Yes.
And The American Empire and the Fourth World, it's a history book. It starts with the concept of globalization since 1492. But I do look at the War on Terror. Barry Vicker made a reference to it, a generous reference to it, in that documentary you spoke about, that seminal documentary where he talked about another view of 9/11 from the one we get in the mainstream media.
Right.
So the project is called The Bowl with One Spoon. So The American Empire and the Fourth World is Volume 1 of The Bowl with One Spoon. Volume 2, I'm working on it. It's called Earth into Property, Aboriginal History and the Making of Global Capitalism. And, you know, it's not a 9/11 book, but it will, it does affect the way I read recent developments, my growing appreciation of the lies and crimes of 9/11. So that will be reflected in that text, but it's a text that probes down deeply. I think there's an awful lot of the military-industrial complex of Nazi Germany that gets incorporated into the U.S. military-industrial complex. After all, Nazi Germany was largely about stopping the spread of communism, of Soviet communism.
Mm-hmm.
So the U.S. take in the science, the psychological warfare experts, the spies, into their own military-industrial complex after World War II. I think that is a key to understanding some of the things that are going on now in the name of the War on Terror.
Okay. I call it the War of Terror. I find it much more accurate.
It's an absurdity because, of course, war is terror.
Yeah.
There is no way to think about war outside of thinking about war as terror.
Yeah.
So how can you have terror on terror? How can you have war to diminish terror?
Yeah.
It's really the most broad, sweeping campaign of psychological warfare ever, I think. That's basically what I see the War on Terror as. It's first and foremost a campaign of psychological warfare. And that's why it's so crucial that we get down into the details of what really happened on 9/11. so much of the peace movement, and I've been guilty of this myself. You know, we think, okay, we're going to impose the invasion of Afghanistan, of Iraq. We're going to impose these infringements on our civil liberties. We're going to attack this part or criticize this part or that part or the other part of the so-called war on terror. But the war on terror, it has its origins in this interpretation of the events of 9/11. And unless we get down into that and deconstruct that and expose those lies and crimes in that particular event, as long as we leave an opening that maybe it was Muslim extremists, maybe there is people out there who did it. As long as there is that hint of even a hint of that suggestion, it kind of justifies or might seem to justify some of these actions. So we really have no choice. We really are in for an eternity of tyranny unless we expose that event. And we can do that in Canada. We need to demand that of our political parties, of our political representatives, of those seeking political support from us. Mm-hmm. And we have to be insistent about it. It just is unconscionable that we can't get our own investigation into the origins of the war on terror.
Well, that was going to be one of my final questions, is what actions or methods do you find that do work well and that don't work so well as far as spreading 9/11 truth and encouraging our government and media to speak on our behalf?
Really, I can't see any shortcut but simply to demand of the media, and it seems to me that the CBC is particularly, has a particular responsibility to us to be, we give that organization its mandate, we fund that organization. They can't continue to simply leave us in the dark, not even address the breaking story that we can read about in books and articles and major websites on the internet.
Yeah.
To simply just treat that as if it doesn't exist, to keep their head in the sand. People need to be criticized for that, and politicians. If we're wrong, then that'll come out in the investigation. But to say we're just not going to investigate, we're just going to accept the U.S. Version of what happened. The U.S. Government lied to us when they extradited Leonard Peltier. The U.S. government often lies in their official venues, and why should we assume that they're not lying to us? Why should we take it for granted that they're telling us the truth and all they know in this situation?
Well, Professor Hall, I'd like to thank you for taking the time out of your busy schedule to visit this radio show. If you have a short final comment, this would be the time.
Well, I just wish you well, Raymond, and good for you. And this is really enlightening and heartening for me to see the number of people that come forward, the Richard Brinkmans, the Emily Vokes in Edmonton, to see the dedication of the Kevin Barretts or the Carol Bouyers, who actually ran for office in the United States.
Yeah, she did.
Maybe
yeah.
we need to have some of that ourselves, actually run for our office. Webster Tarpley talks about that. And, of course, as we ask for truth in 9/11, we need to find truth on many fronts. I see Montreal 9/11 Truth, Patrick Biron, is developing that website as a place where truths that we need to know about, for instance, with respect to the scandal around Julie Couillard and the whistleblower Marie-Claire Montpetit, things that I've learned about on that site. As we seek truth on many fronts, we're tired of the lies.
Yeah.
We're tired of the litany of lies, and we're not going to stand for it anymore.
Sounds good.
Okay.
Okay, Professor Hall, I want to thank you once again, and best luck and best wishes to your brave advancement in becoming yet the latest academic challenge other Canadians to stand up and do the same.
Okay. Cheerio, Ryan.
Thank you very much, sir.
Bye.
Okay, friends. There we go. That was an interview with Professor Tony J. Hall of the Lethbridge of University. He's the founding coordinator of the Globalization Studies at Lethbridge University. We were speaking, he was in Lethbridge tonight. So that is going to do it for our show. Thank you very much, everyone, for tuning in. This is the Unbought and Unbossed show on CHLY 101.7 FM. Musical Equation is up next. We'll see you next week.